My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 1396.ps10105, certificate number 36155, Vinegar Valentines.
This is for you, Lucy. Happy Valentine's Day. No, that doesn't sound right. Here, Lucy, this is for you. Happy Valentine's Day. You can do it if you just don't get nervous. This is for you, Lucy. Happy Valentine's Day. Okay, take it easy. You can do it. This is for you, Lucy. Merry Christmas. Oh.
What is your Valentine's Day like?
Is this a show about my ex-girlfriends?
Yes.
Vinegar Valentine.
We've got them all here. All right, come in.
This is your life.
This is your dating life.
What are my Valentines?
Well, I'm a Valentine's Day could not really be lower stakes for a married man of my age.
Because you have to get some candy, right?
Yeah, the expectations are very realistic. There should be flowers and dinner and all the fraught kind of Valentine's culture of the past. You know, will I have a Valentine? Will I have a date? Will I get any? Am I Charlie Brown or will I get any cards in my mailbox? You know, those have all vanished away. But does it still loom large in your calendar?
My problem is that as someone who was a member of alternative culture, Generation X alternative culture.
I've heard of such a thing. Hanky codes and whatnot.
That's right. Throughout most of my dating life, the women that I would date would be, on the surface, very contemptuous of Valentine's
of
Day.
Of a normie greeting card holiday that's like right. Valentine's
Just
Day.
Like, I'm not into Valentine's Day.
But...
There's also a lot, you can commit a lot of infractions around Valentine's Day, and I've committed all of those infractions.
All of them?
Pretty much. You, I mean, I don't know.
You've done a double murder on Valentine's Day.
How can you know infractions that you haven't transgressed, right?
I'll name some awful things you can do on Valentine's Day, and you tell me. Did you ever bring two girls to the dance at once?
No, but you know, versions of that, like, you know, it's very hard to celebrate no Valentine's Day if someone imposes a Valentine's Day celebration upon you.
Sure.
You know, it's hard to navigate a world where there are a lot of people who don't want to celebrate Valentine's Day unless they see someone else celebrating Valentine's Day. And then they wonder, why no Valentine's Day? So, yeah, I've had to tiptoe around it quite a bit. I've never, because I'm alternative, Ken...
I didn't know alternative was just to get out of jail free card for forgetting holidays, but I love it.
I've never leaned into it either. Because there's a feeling that there are a lot of holidays that are kind of amateur nights. You know, New Year's Eve, St. Patrick's Day, and Cinco de Mayo are all.
And you yearn to be in Times Square on New Year's Eve.
I so do not. But and as a musician, playing a show on New Year's Eve
right.
is great, particularly if you're the headliner and you're on stage at midnight, because you can, you know, rally the room, and it's so fun to be up there. And then after everybody pops their corks, you launch into your hit and the room goes crazy, you know?
You didn't need to bring any talent or energy. The Gregorian calendar did it for you.
That's right. One year, the Decembrists were opening for us, and we played Death Cab's This Is the New Year at New Year.
I was just thinking of that song, and I was wondering if that's an attempt to harness that energy.
Yeah, like,
To get the cheap thrills of the New Year's.
And to cover it, because we, you know, we rocked it out. We made it really big and heavy. It was just so invigorating. Whereas
even though the song is about the opposite of invigoration.
It is. Years. As all Death Cab songs. But, and being on stage on Valentine's Day is great, because you can be the ringleader and ringmaster of everybody else's Valentine's experience.
You're wearing a Cupid diaper and yeah. carrying a bow and arrow, probably.
But you're absolved. Actually, there's a music video by the band Stag where I play a Valentine heart. I wear a Valentine heart costume, and I'm depicted.
Is it like a cheap Minions dollar store?
No, it's a beautiful Valentine's costume. You should see it. And I'm depicted as being in a tavern with Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny, and we all getting loaded. And then I go out. I'm a sad Valentine because it's an alternative.
Is this canon
generation
that the
X.
Easter Bunny that there's a personified Valentine card that hangs out with Santa and the Easter Bunny and Jack Skellington?
It may just be. The band Stag that came up with this.
They've got their own detailed mythology, like yeah. Devo.
But yeah, a futurelings should go check out the video because it's a wonderful. Valentine's.
I've run afoul of working on Valentine. I was thinking about this. Like the only Valentine's Day story I could really remember was the Jeopardy shows where I got beaten by the supercomputer aired the week of Valentine's Day. And so Sony wanted me to do a full.
Do you not name the supercomputer? Is that a thing where you refuse to let its name cross your lips?
Why should it get a name? It doesn't have a name.
Thank you.
Its name is a marketing gimmick, right? Just to give it a name, or to say he.
Oh, I love this.
Is to give it a legitimacy that it does not deserve.
How did I not know this? That you refuse to name the computer? I love this.
I actually have never thought of that before.
But, no, but I like
but from
it.
Now on I will.
It should be a thing. Oh, I said computer and the dumb
other
computer.
They're everywhere. But so I was supposed to do a full day of promotion for the W Word match. And I said, well, you know, that's February 14th. And they were like, okay, yeah, the games are on the 14th and the 15th. And we were going to be in New York. And I was like, well, I just need to be done by 7 so I can take my wife to dinner. If we're going to be in New York on Valentine's Day and I don't take my wife to dinner, how do you think that's going to go over? And they were just like, yeah, see, I don't know. I mean, we want to do this 4-hour satellite media tour, and then we might have some evening hits. And I was like, no, here's what I'm saying. The evening hits stop at 7 o'clock so I can take my wife out for Valentine's Day and save my marriage. Yeah, but so that was the diciest Valentine's Day
people,
for me.
These people.
These publicists.
Ugh.
So listeners of a future era presumably have their own festival celebrating love or fertility. Possibly even in the spring. I think I just said fertility, which is not
fertility.
A word.
Is that true? Do you think that fertility celebrations are a thing that's immutable, that every culture will still have that?
Have you heard the story that links Valentine's Day to the Roman mid-February Ides of Lupercalia?
Yeah. Oh, that's a story we tell every Valentine's Day. We sit around the Valentine tree and talk about Lupercalia.
Tell your kids about the true meaning of Lupercalia. That is not true, in fact.
Oh.
There is no evidence, historical evidence, linking our modern celebration of Valentine's or the early Christian martyr of St. Valentine to Lupercalia in any way.
It seems like a very Roman holiday, doesn't it? Not the movie, but the actual thing.
What about it seems Roman to you?
Oh, I don't know. It just seems pagan.
It can turn more into an orgy faster than
just,
Halloween or Thanksgiving.
It just feels like the heart, first of all. Like, where... I was wondering this the other day. This two-lobed, pointy-bottomed depiction of the heart. Like, how far back does that go?
It's not that different. I mean, it has the heart does have lobes.
Yeah.
It's not pointy on the...
But is it a thing like the Star of David or the swastika that's like an ancient symbol that kind of was happened upon? Did people draw hearts before they connected it to the human heart?
I believe that there is some modern scholarship suggesting that it may be anatomical, that it may represent the erogenous zones of the human body, which often have those kind of two bulges and then a pointy below, whether upstairs or downstairs.
Or above, yeah.
Yeah, there are... Because
we were watching the Mandalorian and we realized that the Mandalorian spaceship just looks like fallopian tubes.
The Slave One?
Yeah, the Slave... No, not... The Slave One is Boba Fett's.
Oh, you're right. The other one that he drives around.
Yeah, Mando's little craft.
Right. There is a... You know, a lot of aphrodisiacs of the past have heart-shaped leaves and fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So it may also be, you know, an attempt to represent a specific kind of love plant.
Love plant, baby, love plant.
From the movie The Love Guru. But yeah, all these stories later that, you know, Saint Valentine somehow drew lots or got a couple together, or that, you know, the Roman festival of Lupercalia was related to fertility anyway. It really wasn't.
Well,
there's no romantic overlay to any of this.
What are the Cupid? That's a Roman.
That's revisionism, man.
Oh.
Cupid was like a sexy guy.
Yeah, sexy guy.
Sneaking into blindfold Psyche.
Not a baby with wings.
Not a cute little Jeremy Piven shooting arrows at people. The idea of, you know, all the kind of these modern trappings of a springtime connection between Saint Valentine and getting it on,
mm-hmm.
appear to relate, go back no further than Chaucer and some of his poetic contemporaries.
Oh, interesting.
Who observed that spring was the season when birds begin to pair up and nest.
Even birds do it.
Birds do it, bees do it. And you might point out, Ken, February 14th is way too early for birds to be nesting.
Well, not necessarily. Some birds are already having babies in February.
And, you know, with climate change, I'm sure we're speaking to an audience for whom the cherry blossoms bloom in November. But that's often the objection there is usually met with the argument that due to the precession of the equinoxes and specifically the 9-day difference between the Julian and Gregorian calendars.
Is this the argument that comes up often?
Over coffee. Uh-huh. You've heard this before.
Sure, at Cars and Coffee.
February 14th would have been much closer to, like, you know, an early March setting, which is within the realm of possibility for birds to start shacking up.
Right.
And
in Rome more than...
Sexily molting.
Than Stockholm.
But again, yeah, exactly. But again, this you know, this seems to come to us from medieval times, from specifically notions of courtly love that would have caught on in the 15th century, not when she was married to Kurt Cobain.
Right.
But
medieval times was one of my favorite restaurants.
You know, the idea that you know, that women are to be wooed, and there's a specific set of you know, romantic gestures.
Wait, is that not true now?
It's definitely true now.
My handbook right here.
But it has not been true throughout history.
Oh, I see.
You know, the idea that people court and then marry for love is a modern invention. Love was a very small part of human relationships, including courtship and marriage, until fairly recent centuries.
Yeah,
we invented it in the 1980s. The show Moonlighting, I believe, invented it. When David Blaine, whatever Sybil Shepherd's character's
was name his name
was
really
got
David
together.
Blaine?
There's no way it was David Blaine.
No,
it was
David.
I was Hasselhoff. About to say David Becker, but that's not right either. I should just stick to Sam Malone and Diane Chambers.
Yeah, let's do that,
because those are names I know for sure. And then I won't have. I mean, people are already emailing me right now to tell me the name of
the guy from
of the Blue Moon Detective Agency characters' names. It is, in fact, Maddie Hayes and David Addison.
David Addison.
How could we forget? I guess was I thinking of John McClane?
It was super easy for me to forget.
Really? What about those classic episodes like the musical one, the dream sequence one.
Yeah.
We loved them all.
No, we did.
So anyway, like, there's no ancient backing for Valentine's Day at all.
No, that figures, right? It's, I mean, that's part of our alternative culture denunciation of it, that it's just a commercial holiday produced by Big Chocolate.
And in fact, that is 100% true.
Oh.
Valentine's Day is a creation of a greeting card industry.
Generation X was right for a change.
And that's why you don't have to do anything nice for your mom in May.
That's another one. My mom doesn't care about it. She's against it because my mom was proto-alternative.
The greeting card industry, you know, it dates back to the turn of the 19th century. There's a 1797 collection called The Young Man's Valentine Writer, which drew upon some of these traditions of romantic love to include some snatches of verse that would be sure to...
Are you sure they would use the word snatches?
Probably for something else. Excerpts of verse, if that kind of helps dehornify the show for you.
Thank you.
That would help turn your young maiden's bat her eyelashes or turn her to thoughts of love.
Back when verse really played a different role.
Yeah. Poetry is very, very unimportant in getting laid today.
Right. These days, I don't know, though. You could still lay out some killer poem, and I bet...
As an indie singer-songwriter, you're probably the last person for whom there was actually some link between poetry and sex.
Yeah, there are people that have my lyrics tattooed upon their bodies.
Really?
Yeah, and that's pretty sexy.
That's a heavy responsibility.
But they're using that sexiness on other people. They're not using that sexiness on me. I just get to, like, it's one of the things that when I stand on stage on Valentine's Day, I'm like, I've done my work.
When you mentioned your string of alternative girlfriends, there is something that's still very gendered about the greeting card industry, even in a time of greater equality and a whole spectrum of straight, gay, and bi relationships. To this day, I think 80% of greeting cards are bought by women.
Oh, bought by women?
Yes.
To give to their...
To both men and women. I think the recipients would be a little more equal opportunity.
You buy a greeting card every year?
I do not.
I do not.
I bought a thank you card recently, and I actually had to figure out how one does it. I remember walking into the Target or the drugstore, whatever it was, and thinking, so there's these $3 thank you cards, or there's this box of thank you cards that also cost $3. I don't understand.
You have all these other ones.
I don't understand anything about this industry. I bought the nicer one because I'm just that good a person.
Yeah.
But I did think maybe I was doing it wrong, because how can the box of 12 be the same price as the one?
I have a lot of greeting cards I've received over the years, all from women, and I keep them, but when I find them in a box, you know, it's usually just like a...
Do they bring any kind of emotion?
Well, that's the thing. It's just a platitude, and then at the bottom, it's like love and signed by someone that I loved. But the greeting card itself, like...
You'd rather have a handwritten note, even if it didn't have a lace border or a picture of a puppy.
So when I do give someone a Valentine's note, I usually take a piece of paper out of the hopper of the copy machine in the office. Often, I take a page out of the hopper of the copy machine of the person I'm about to write a Valentine to.
After Xeroxing your butt.
And no, I don't Xerox my butt. Never. And then I draw a big heart on it, and I write some Valentine inside, and that usually works. I mean, it's maybe not the... I didn't go to a drugstore, but, you know, it performs the role.
Yeah, poetry, I mean, the rhyming seems to be very powerful. I mean, that roses are red, violets are blue, snatch of doggerel, sorry to say snatch again. That also goes back to the turn of the 19th century. This was a time when I think there were rooms full of women attaching lace and ribbons and shiny bits of paper to make...
Like crows.
No, they're being paid for it, and they're probably getting some kind of radium poisoning. I don't know at what part in the process they get radium poisoning.
You're just assuming that crows aren't being paid.
Crows are getting paid in the birdseed and dog food chunks that my kid leaves out for them on our balcony. We are the crow gathering place for the neighborhood. But this became a well-known industry in early 19th century England. Dickens referred to it as Cupid's Manufactory.
Huh.
Because emotion and sentiment were being industrialized through lace ribbon and shiny bits of string and paper.
That early?
It's surprising. And it's, but it was, you know, it was still kind of a, you know, 50,000 cards a year industry because, you know, they all had to be made and mailed individually. And then the Industrial Revolution finally catches up with doggerel and sentiment. In 1840, a social reformer named Rowland Hill is successful in reforming the British post. He thinks it should be for everyone.
It wasn't prior?
No, it was expensive. The Rowland Hill, his invention is that what if there were little gummed, cheap squares that you could stick to an envelope that would make it affordable and convenient for anyone to send a note? We now have a newly literate working class for the first time. So now it's not just a small group of aristocratic or educated people sending handwritten notes. You know, now there's a exponentially bigger market for this.
See, this is a reform I can get behind.
Well, he sells it. He pitches it as something that's going to be revenue neutral. Like, sure, we're going to slash postage rates. But what that means is there's a vast audience, you know, a vast customer base that will send 100 times as much mail, and you'll make it up on volume.
Yeah, right.
It's the same thing that happens today with progressives trying to push a, you know, the Green New Deal will create jobs in alternative energies, and, you know, we can't afford not to do this. And Rowland Hill is successful by appealing to capitalism. He invents the postage stamp.
Huh.
This is the penny black.
That's cool.
And the following year, the number of greeting cards sent increases tenfold. 400,000 Valentine cards are sent in 1840.
And when was this? When was the postage stamp adopted in the Americas? Right away?
Congress authorized them in the same decade, in 1847.
That's how we got all those romantic Civil War letters that we all think of.
They would not have been sent otherwise. The early stamps were a five cent Franklin stamp, a 10 cent George Washington stamp. So not that different than today,
except, but expensive in their time.
Exactly. When you think about what that is with inflation, that's multiple dollars.
Yeah.
Today.
Right. But that's what long distance phone calls used to represent to us, right? You'd get on the phone with mom back home and it was $15 at the end.
Sure. But it was something that would be. It was now something that was practical for families to occasionally do. You would budget for for mailing to keep in touch with faraway.
Yeah, how cool.
Friends and relations. You know, in the U.S., Valentine's Day cards did begin to take off as well. I found an editorial from mid-century Cincinnati just before the Civil War saying that it was more civilized actually not to direct Valentine cards at a particular sweetheart. I guess a popular kind of party would be for everyone to write a love note, roll it up and put it in a punch bowl, and then random love notes would be drawn. So you would receive a bit of sentimental poetry from a rando Valentine. And that was just as good, I guess, because what you want is the heart palpitations of getting the pretty words more than you want, you know, the actual relation behind it might actually be threatening or at some point sexual.
Are you old enough to remember a time when in school you were not forced to give a Valentine to everyone?
I was trying to remember this the other day because, of course, for my kids, you had to give a Valentine for everyone or no one. And it was true for birthday party invitations, everyone or no one, or you had to do it outside of class. I think we definitely did the little box on our desks with the slot, but I think you had to give a Valentine to everyone. Did you not have to do that in elementary school?
I feel like I was pretty young when the "you have to give a Valentine to everyone" was first instituted, because I remember—
You were the guinea pig for this?
Yeah.
Maybe you were the one that was didn't give enough of the girls Valentines and you forced the change.
Maybe. I feel like by 1975, you know, so many of the social experiments that we've forced on our children began in the 1970s, right? All the theories of the 1960s, it was like, you know what we should do? We should start with five-year-olds. And I remember the first Valentine's Day that I got 30 Valentines and feeling
ambivalent
about it.
Well, does it feel... I remember just kind of thinking like it was a valueless exercise.
Yeah.
Because everybody was going to get the exact same mass-produced Valentines. And really, the only thing exciting was if somebody had the wherewithal to tape a little lollipop or Hershey's Kiss to their card.
Well, for me, by fifth grade, I guess, I actually had a girl I liked. And I really searched through my 30 Valentines for the one from her, hoping that she'd put an exclamation point on it or something. And, you know, and had that, still managed to have the deflating dismay of discovering that the Valentine from the girl I liked was just a mass signed, that's just exactly the same as she gave everyone else.
It was the same Dukes of Hazzard postcard that everybody got.
Yeah, I really, really wanted, I really wanted it to be special from her. And so, yes, although they tried to democratize Valentine's Day, I still found a way to be sad.
So this 1970s Valentine's Day is exactly like an 1870s Valentine's Day, with people sending mass-produced cards with cute little poems. Maybe they have a dash of perfume, you know, anything to give a little thrill to a sweetheart. But there's a parallel tradition that's been almost entirely forgotten,
which is to murder your rival on Valentine's Day.
Well, that hasn't been for that never goes out of style. There was a trend of what were called comic Valentines, to the degree that, you know, during the Civil War, you would go to a stationer's and you would buy a set of Valentines, and it would have, here's three friendly ones, two sentimental ones, one kind of hot one, and here are the five comic ones.
That are ironic? That are meant to tease?
They are the opposite of a regular Valentine, which offers a message of romance, or if not romance, at least affection. These kind of Valentines were jokes, and not even affectionate jokes, but for the most part, insult comedy. They're called vinegar Valentines because they are so sour. They are mean-spirited and insulting.
Now we're back to talking about my ex-girlfriends.
They were largely forgotten because when people received these,
they threw them away.
So it took some 21st century archaeology. There's a Brighton academic named Annabella Pollan who came across a stash of one and then has, you know, spent a few decades kind of categorizing them and amassing them and writing scholarly treatises on what she calls vinegar Valentines.
See, being a scholar isn't all a drag.
No, the idea that they all operate in this rarefied world of meaningless distinctions only for insiders is not true at all.
No, you can go back and find old skanky Valentines.
She spent 20 years taxonomizing really just awful insult poetry from the Victorian era. And what could be better than that? You can still see these for sale on eBay, where they're generally called penny dreadfuls.
Oh, yeah.
But in real life, that's a more general term for any kind of sensationalist and cheaply printed material for the newly literate working class.
Penny dreadful.
Penny dreadfuls, I think, more typically would have some kind of maybe lurid crime story. It would have a folk song to learn and play, you know, a popular ballad or something.
Apparently,
you know,
it's also a TV show.
Any cheaply printed thing could be called a penny dreadful.
I see.
This was a very specific kind of penny dreadful publishing. They looked like Valentine cards. They were cheap. They, like Valentine cards, they would often be signed your secret admirer. They would be anonymous in some way. Like Valentine cards, they would often have a 4 to 6 line poem and then some kind of illustration, which would often mimic the tropes of Valentine's Day, a lacy border, the red traditional hearts, and so forth. Some kind of illustration, which would vary from just a very crude, cheap woodcut to a more elaborate, colorful illustration.
But they were super goth?
They were worse than goth. They were just mean. Sometimes they were anti-Valentines. Like, they would be an announcement that you did not like someone,
right,
who maybe thought you did or had been pursuing you.
Roses are red, violets are blue, I hope you die.
Here's an example. To my Valentine. It's a woman holding a lime or a lemon, I guess, which would be the, you know, the sourest or bitterest fruit. 'Tis a lemon that I hand you and bid you now skidoo. Which really then is now is one of the worst things you can bid anyone. Because I love another, there is no chance for you.
Ouch.
So you would just put that in the mail to some, you know, to the woman at the store who you thought had been giving you long looks.
Boo.
Or to the gentleman on the trolley who's always a little too attentive or something. So often they are to reject romantic advances.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they'd just be to zing people you know, like April Fool's Day. I'm a joker, and this is my time of year to send my friend this postcard that says, "Boozer, you drink all day and most the night, and then you wonder why you climb up posts and always see pink elephants in the sky. Lol, you're a drunk."
This is from when?
This one is as late as the 1940s, which would be the very end of the vinegar Valentine era. It's lasted about a century.
Yeah, because I was wondering, like, the word skidoo, I think of as a 1920s, and then pink elephants,
pink elephants is definitely a post-Dumbo innovation, I think.
There are plenty of people I would like to send a greeting card to say, "You're a drunk." But I would never send a Valentine card to somebody that said, "No chance for you."
Well, they get worse. I mean, at least being drunk is a moral failing. And some of them were sent for things like that.
Oh, that's arguable, Ken. But yes, go on.
Addiction is a disease, Ken. But here's something that's not a moral failing. The headline just says, "Bald head. Your bright shining pate is seen at all shows and invariably down in the bald-headed rows."
Whoa, there are bald-headed rows?
There was segregated seating at the time? "Where you make conspicuous by your tender care your true ardent love for that one lonesome hair." And then it's a picture of a guy whose head is so gleaming that bees or flies are circling it in dazzlement. This is a card for 1907. So you would just have a random bald friend or acquaintance whose address you knew, and you would just send them an anonymous card that mimics a love message but actually says, "Lol, you're bald." And this was acceptable.
Boy, well, you know, we live in a time when we are very attentive to other people's feelings, even more so than we were even 10 years ago. But
sure, plenty of stuff that would have, you know, been day-to-day school behavior for us is now like
super off limits.
Call a district-wide assembly robocall bullying.
Right. But yeah, this puts a whole other spin on it. Super mean.
If you disapprove of some kind of behavior in a near stranger, there were cards tailored to that. You know, this one just says, "Sales lady, as you wait upon the women with disgust upon your face, the way you snap and bark at them, one would think you owned the place."
Ooh, double diss.
So it's your yearly chance to get revenge on someone you don't even know, but who has some moral failing you disapprove of.
Right, who was mean when she was selling you some gloves.
Yes. And often they reinforce social norms. A lot of them are for henpecked husbands. Like they show a husband showing a baby or holding a baby as if that would be a huge, feminizing disgrace.
You baby holder.
Let's see if I can find an example of one of those. They're just really awful. The visiting pest. "Oh, pest, get out and please keep out. Oh, stay away forever. I'll call you when I want you here. I'm certain 'twill be never."
You know, when you think about how Twitter is misused now, there's an awful lot of anonymous or pseudo-anonymous, because who can tell who you are behind your avatar, you know, insults, character assassination.
That's the thing we say about the internet is that the discourse immediately goes wrong because there's no face-to-face accountability.
But these are presumably mostly anonymous. If you take them at face value. I mean, I suppose if I sent you one of these, you know, the balding one, for example, you know, you would take it as a lighthearted jest. You would say, no, I've been subscribing to this. I've been subscribing to Keeps and I don't have this issue anymore. But you know, you could send these as humorous friend things, but you could also, I mean, the anonymity. Like the woman that's a saleswoman at the department store.
How would you get her? I guess you send it to the shop.
Right, or you slip it into her.
So all year you've been building up these grievances against the the tradesman who's snippy with you, or the person on the bus who stood on your feet, or
your bald wife's other friend.
Here's one that seems like more like something you would send a friend just to kind of roast them a bit. Held in bondage, your wifey holds you in her hands. You dare not disobey commands, and every single cent you earn, she takes, and so has money to burn.
Mm.
They're not, none of them actually have any kind of punchline, really. I mean, some of the later ones do kind of have a twist in the final line. Hey, lover boy, the place for you is home upon the shelf, because the only one who'd kiss you is a jackass like yourself.
Wow.
This is actually, a lot of these seem to be a little misogynistic, aimed at some kind of no chance old maid, but this is actually a man with a mustache, maybe a Lothario, who is made to kiss a donkey. I like the ones that are kind of anti-Don Juan.
I mean, roasting people is one of life's great pleasures, but you have to, there has to be affection for the roast to be really...
Yeah, when it's a drive-by to really a stranger.
Kill. Yeah, right. I mean, you just feel like all it does is make you look at everybody that comes into the store and go, is it you?
It's just like getting some comment on social media that says, you suck, yeah, or you're wrong.
Yeah, you were stupid in that thing, or you are a bad father.
And the most mean-spirited ones are, you know, here's one you would send to a show-off. And I think sometimes you'd buy them in a pack where each one is for a different moral failing, and you'd be like, ooh, which of my friends is the boozer?
Right.
And which one is the pest? Right. And which one is... So this is for the show-off, and it's got a guy balancing a chair on his nose, that famous thing that we hate when people do. You claim you're good at anything, so come on, show some proof, and let me see how good you are at jumping off the roof. Just an anonymous note to encourage suicide. Here's this one's a little more of a...
Pretty good burn,
the
though.
Misogynistic one I was looking for. You've got more curves than a roller coaster. Your clothes fit like a glove. There's one thing wrong, Glamourpuss. You've a face only a mother could love. And the twist has kind of been tipped by the fact that the woman looking at herself in the mirror, you know, has an obvious kind of...
Big nose.
Basil Wolverton hideous face. But yeah, so this was a Valentine's Day tradition for a century, that you would be sending something nice to your sweetheart and just something mean to the lady downstairs in your boarding house that always plays the piano too loudly or something.
Are there analogs to this other places in the culture where, like, insult comedy was a 19th century thing?
You know, this is not quite what you're talking about, but I did find out just over Christmas that a lot of our American Christmas traditions of Santa Claus and Twas the Night Before Christmas and so on were a specific attempt to mine some old world and Dutch traditions in order to keep Christmas from being a holiday for rowdy young men.
Oh.
I guess it was turning into a thing where groups of young college guys would get together and get loaded and do pranks and vandalism. And, you know, the town fathers got together and thought, how do we make Christmas not be Cinco de Mayo? So today what we think of is just kind of a sentimental holiday that's always been like that, had to be...
And very family.
Right. It had to be turned into a family holiday by a public branding campaign to keep it from descending into St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah. How would we do that to St. Patrick's Day? What can we do to convert St. Patrick's Day and Cinco de Mayo into family-friendly holidays?
What you're saying is you want to keep Irish people out of bars and fistfights? I'm sure that's easy to do. That won't be a problem.
Anti-Irish racism is...
It's the worst kind.
It's really the worst. And we don't condone it here at Omnibus. We are against Nazism, and we're against Irish bigotry.
So there was a whole industry of
greeting. Now the Welsh, on the other hand,
that anything goes. So there's a whole industry publishing a spectrum of these little poems, from kind of fond poking at somebody's foibles to just really kind of bitter. I hate you, stranger. You are a nerve destroyer. When a pig's getting slaughtered, the noise that it makes is sweeter by far than your trills and your shakes. And it shows a lady singing badly. and the howling of cats in the backyard at night compared with your singing's a dream of delight.
Ugh.
Man.
But this presumes that the reader knows what a pig being slaughtered sounds like, so it definitely dates to an earlier time.
Yes, this one is late 19th century. And you can tell by the illustration styles, which change over time.
And this also would have been a time when people sang more around the piano.
Sure, that was a really good... I mean, this would really wound somebody, because somebody would have been somebody who does performs like this would have been very proud of their of their voice and their musical abilities.
There's nothing more personal than saying someone is a bad singer to their face when they think they're a good singer.
Ouch. And so, as you can, you know, we think of this time as a time when, you know, these kind of bad feelings, this kind of modern, petty sniping, just didn't exist or would be repressed. And the answer is it was repressed. And the outlet was this one time a year when you could get it all off your chest.
Right.
And of course there was moralizing against it. You know, the Atlantic newspapers on both sides of the Atlantic called it a filthy, nauseating practice. In 1866, the New York Times condemned Vinegar Valentines because of a fearful tendency to the development of swearing in males of all ages. It's not clear why sending a rude card also encourages somebody to swear, but that's what the papers were saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that led to the nail in the coffin is stories circulating. And the earliest one appears to be a real case that happened in 1847 of these anonymous cards leading to suicides.
What? No.
Well, you heard the one about you might as well jump on the roof because you're a goof who's always balancing a chair on your nose or whatever.
It's funny because I'm still thinking that these are mostly in good humor, but you're saying that they really, really are.
Well, imagine the first kind, which is the anti-Valentine you send to somebody who you want to announce that I'm tired of your advances.
Yeah, right.
I mean, maybe that's empowering if you want to imagine a working girl sending that to her boss. You know, I endorse that. But if you just have some lovesick person who's been mooning after you all year and you're sick of it and you send a cruel card, I think in 1847 there was a case in New York of a woman drinking laudanum and dying after getting a mean Vinegar Valentine.
But then, you know, by definition, that's not an anonymous one. That's a signed one.
I guess that's true.
Right? Like, just to say your affections are not reciprocated by me, random nobody.
Well, a lot of the anti-romantic ones are like, nobody likes you. You know, like you could be, which is still to this day, the meanest thing you can say to, you know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, high schoolers put on Discord to really wound if they haven't been rehabilitated by our new anti-bullying society. You know,
right.
Like the idea that everyone agrees that you're awful, you know, we've all been laughing at you. You know, that is the kind of thing that really, you know, to this day, one misplaced text can lead to a tragic outcome. And it was true in the 19th century as well as today, maybe fueled by the same things, you know, anonymity, a lack of, you know, training and modeling on how to not offer these kind of criticisms. You know, what's a more helpful way if you have a friend who, whose alcoholism or pushy behavior you would like to point out?
Dear friend, I'm very concerned about your drinking. I mean, it remains a question whether or not you hit them hard.
I don't think this kind of card counts as a very good intervention, though. It seems to fail on a number of levels.
Well, there are some situations where I feel like I've sent some strongly worded texts recently. In one case, a guy who, you know, came out of rehab and went right back into his bad behavior, where I felt like, you've had enough soft treatment.
Tough love.
Time for a greeting card that says, you need to get off the sauce.
Hey, boozer.
Yeah. So, but again, not sent mean-spiritedly.
And these are not for the recipient. These are for the sender to either get something off their chest or have a mean, malicious thrill that they can't exercise in daily life. Yeah. I wonder what percentage of people sent these. I wonder if it was just a small number of self-proclaimed wags and jokers who were just buying these up by the hundreds, and most people thought it was tacky and awful. I'd like to think so.
Well, yeah, it seems like maybe a thing that you would buy, you would dream of sending to someone, and just having it and addressing it in your mind would be enough to kind of make you go, ha, ha, ha. I mean, I would never do it, but.
I have lately started doing that. Really? I've lately started, well, I mean, not buying something and then not mailing it, but definitely writing out the thing I would say to the person on my computer who's being wrong.
Oh.
And then just being like, ah, I got it out. I'm not even going to send this.
That's 100%.
Nothing will good of sending it.
You know, my policy of not sending any emails that I write at 2 o'clock in the morning has, it's a fairly new policy, but it's really kept me out of hot water. And it's true.
Does it date to 2 a.m. last night?
Yeah, no, but I do still write emails that are like, you know where you can put it? And it's kind of great.
The genius of writing and not sending is you always get the last word.
And that concludes Vinegar Valentines. Entry 1396.PS10105. Certificate number 36155 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, only send nice posts via Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
If you find an old, antique, vintage, Victorian card that says something mean about me and John, please send it to us, but with a disclaimer.
Yeah. Send it to us at...
That we should appreciate it ironically.
P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Can send us all manner of Valentine, although this episode is coming out...
The day after Valentine's Day.
The day after Valentine's Day. So if you're only hearing about it now, it's a little late.
If you're listening 1,000 years hence, maybe your fertility festival is in October when the hummingbird tongue flowers begin to... spread their sickly, sweet scent all over the land.
We will receive, because Ken and I are both alternative, we will accept your Valentines at any time of year, because we don't subscribe to the big Valentine industrial complex.
I like to keep Valentine's Day in my heart all the year round. Hmm. That's what I learned when the three ghosts appeared to me and taught me the true meaning of Valentine's Day.
The salmon moose. You can tweet nice things at us at Ken Jennings and at John Roderick at Omnibus Project. You can email us nice things at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can go on our Facebook Futurelings group or Reddit Futurelings or Discord Futurelings and say nice things about us. The nicest thing you can say or do for us is to go to patreon.com/omnibusproject. And contribute to the production and the general je ne sais quoi, the effervescent
the joie de vivre
about Omnibus by becoming a supporter of the show.
We should have a donation tier where people are allowed to insult us to varying degree based on the generosity of their support.
Wow, what level, what tier is that? You know, you want to make people pay, but you don't want to make it prohibitively high so that the people that really have things to say won't do it.
For $5 a month, you can insult our grammar. For $10 a month, you can insult our facts.
Okay.
For $20 a month, you can insult our appearance.
Okay.
For $50 a month, you can insult our morals.
Yeah, moral character, yeah.
And for $100 or more, you can insult our friends and loved ones, for all I care.
Wait a minute. I won't accept that.
Well, what is your number then?
You can for $100 a month, you can insult our race and culture.
John's wardrobe.
No. That well, would, you'd be.
That's your highest level.
You'd be way off the rails. No. What is the thing you hold most sacred? I mean, I don't want my family brought into it.
My country.
Your country. For $100 or no, for $500 a month, you can insult our nation.
You can say something mean about our nation with its good healthcare system and good governance and perfect representative democracy.
Mm-hmm. And a global foreign policy that is with above reproach.
It won't bother us at all.
So that's it for that.
That's the sentence you can always say after everything. So that's it for that.
Listeners,
From our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe may never come. But if that's it for that, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.